It's Saturday, July the 14th, 2018. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Well, hello, and welcome to a podcast on moving at the speed of creativity. As you know, if you are a subscriber, I haven't been podcasting here a lot. I've ended up doing weekly podcasts, which are still continuing on the EdTech Situation Room with Jason Neifer, but I'm not pod fading, not abandoning this channel, not being able to, or not making the time, I guess, to publish things as often as I have in the past. But today I am excited to bring you two different recordings. The first is going to be one from back on June the 7th, last month, with our wonderful elementary art teacher, Megan Thompson, who had a chance to visit Tricia Fugelstadt in the Chicago area this past spring and get some inspiration from Tricia, who is an amazing educator, art teacher, and she is one of the most creative souls you will find on the planet when it comes to teaching art, integrating technology, and just bringing creativity and STEAM into the classroom. So, and she's also a wonderful sharer. So Tricia has a fantastic website, collection of videos, of lessons, her blog. So definitely in the podcast show notes, follow Tricia and check out her work. Do a shout out to her if you listen, as well as to Megan. And my wife Shelley joined me for that interview. And then the next part of the podcast is going to be an interview from today. Shelley and I, my wife, have done or led iPad Media Camps the last 5 summers, and this summer have switched gears to a Make Media Camp format of 1 day. And so anyway, we reflect on this past Friday where we were here in Oklahoma City leading a Make Media Camp Making Media Camp. And then last week we were in Kansas City, downtown in Kansas City Public Schools at Crossroads Charter School. So without further ado, here are those podcasts, and thanks for listening. I hope you're having a great summer if you are here in North America, and as always, would love to know if you're listening to the podcast and have any feedback. You can reach me on Twitter at WFryer or leave a comment here on the Speed of Creativity blog. Today is Thursday, June the 7th, 2018, and this is Wes Fryer at Cassie School, and I am here with wonderful elementary art teacher Megan Thompson and wonderful third grade teacher Shelley Fryer, and we've been wanting to get together actually for
weeks
and weeks, and we had this thing called school going on and end of school meetings and all kinds of things. So all of that is over, and the summer is here, and there's different projects and things going on, but we have this time to talk a little bit because Megan got to go to Chicago and visit some schools and be with Tricia Fugelstadt, who's somebody that I have met, and both Shelley and I, we all three of us actually follow on Twitter. So we're just going to record a little bit to share that. Before we do, though, just to continue what we were talking about with photography, you're about to teach a class in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And what are the goals of your photography and art summer by the lake class? This is for second through fifth graders.
Yeah.
Rising second through fifth graders, or
yeah,
ones that
yeah,
have
rising. So who were my first graders last year? Mm-hmm. Will be second graders. So I'll have a few second graders, but second through fifth. And really there aren't many opportunities for photography camps for kids. And that's something I've been wanting to explore in my classroom, but I haven't done it before with a whole grade level, so I thought, baby steps, try with a small group. That's
absolutely
why I like to do it.
Yeah.
And that's why after school is
going
to be so good to do that.
Yeah.
Sandbox.
So just letting them look through a viewfinder and see things differently and have to slow down and see things and,
Well, and gain the perspectives, right? Because like we were talking about with many lessons, rule of thirds and perspective and, you know, whether you want to, how you want to compose your shot. And
Vocabulary is so important. You know, that's one thing that we learned in A-plus training is that when you're truly integrating, you know, you pick art skills and photography skills and vocabulary and put it all together to produce a project, you know. And so vocabulary, common vocabulary is always really important to isolate, you know, what skills you're going to teach, what vocabulary you're going to use, you know.
Yeah. And there's a lot of overlap. Teaching with drawing, I think this fits right into photography. Absolutely. And I just haven't been able to make the time for it
Well,
yet.
In the way, too, they can combine an image that they've taken and then being able to draw that, you know, and I've seen lots of people do that, and that's not cheating, you know, as far as having an actual photograph and then you're, you know, wanting to represent that with a sketch and with a drawing. Shelley also mentioned art, Parks in Focus, which was something that she did with Positive Tomorrows. Shelley, what were some of the main benefits you saw to Parks in Focus, and what did you love about that project when your kids got to go into the outdoors with digital cameras and then also have a little bit of instruction about photography?
Well, I think number one, its intent was to get inner city kids out of their box. And I think that feels true with any students, is get them out of their box into nature and get them to notice things. You know, we happen to have a lot of wonderful parks here, even in our Oklahoma area, whether it's Martin Nature Park or Stars and Stripes Park or Hafer Park in Edmond or Lake Arcadia, but getting them out, but also getting them to notice things. I'm thumbing through your book, How to Be an Explorer of the World. And I think that's a really important skill. And I think what you were saying about having them go through the viewfinder is important because that gets them to focus in. And that's what I noticed when you put cameras in the hands of students is that they begin to notice things. And we never had issues with inappropriate behavior or whatever because cameras they knew and respected. And then they had a goal, an object, something they had to go and purpose. Do and collect a purpose for that. They had skills that they were practicing. As we were discussing earlier, it's just the perspectives of different students and different people and different sizes. And I mean, it's just.
And what speaks to them.
Absolutely.
And how that stands out can be really beautiful.
Yeah, and how they're able to create within that. They're able to represent the world, but they're able to also create images and compose.
So. And notice the beauty in the world, you know, and not just, you know, see the ant and go, ooh, an ant, but to see the ant and, hey, what is that ant doing? Or, you know, what's that environment he lives in? Or
well, the more that you learn about that natural environment, the more that you can appreciate it. And hopefully then the more you can honor it and protect it, you know, and that all is important stuff as far as kids learning to protect the environment and feel responsibility.
And the more you notice it, see it, the more you notice it, the more you realize it's like all around you and it's everywhere, the little things.
Mm-hmm. And you begin to appreciate it. And I think that was it, just appreciating where we live and who we are and the environment. And then when you appreciate it, then you want to take care of it, you know?
And slowing down, too. I think that the whole idea, and that's where, like, you know, citizen scientists, there's different projects where, you know, people are, involved in collecting data or, you know, doing things, but getting us to use our technology in ways where it actually involves us being in nature, because sometimes we think about technology as being that separating thing that keeps you inside and glued to your screen, you know, versus something that would actually give
you a purpose.
And
there's a great page in this book. This is a book I just got by Carrie Smith. Is that right, Carrie Smith?
Mm-hmm.
How to Be an Explorer of the World. And there's a page about how similar artists are to scientists, the way they observe and analyze and collect.
Document.
And
awesome.
I love that.
Well, and of course, I love the idea that kids can then take those images and be able to reflect with them, right? And being able to use multimedia and then being able to take that into a sketch or some of the stuff hopefully we'll get to do in the spring if we do that. Procreate class might involve even some photography, but then pictures that we take into Procreate that you can draw over or anyway, the ways that those technologies can be used together and blended.
Combined. It's just a different form of mixed media.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that.
Right. We watched a wonderful documentary this week called The Music of Strangers, and it's a Yo-Yo Ma documentary about this project. And part of what he talks about is just how important mixing and remaking and creation is. You know, they have folks from different countries that were and are just like the exemplary musical performers with these different instruments. And so some people were critical of them, like watering down their cultural tradition, etc. And no, it wasn't pure, but they brought them together. And when they brought these different things together, there was creativity, there was new, and it was invigorating. Mm-hmm. So I think in the same way, you know, different kinds of media and then real experiences, you know, that whole thing of let's go outside, let's, you know, see what else we can experience, but then bringing it in and reflecting on it.
Yeah, this book has a lot of cool ideas in it.
I know. I'm thinking letting students look through that if they have finished their work or as kind of a prompt in their sketchbook for when time allows for that.
Well, and I'm thinking, again, language arts. You're thinking art, but just language arts prompts and writing, putting the words and making the words the art as well.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, there's that school in Oklahoma City. Is it called? It's not Odyssey. What is it downtown? Where they don't have their own building?
John Rex? No.
Well, John Rex is the charter, but I think it may be Odyssey. They have a building now? Originally they didn't, but they were just, you know, they were going to all these different spaces, and part of what they were talking about and excited about was, you know, learning in different spaces and kind of the world is my classroom sort of thing.
Which reminds me, one of the schools I visited when I was in Chicago, they had a lot of getting outside, and the city is my classroom, and exploring murals and art districts,
right.
Which we're fortunate to have so much of here in Oklahoma City. I mean, you should have an art field trip. There's several areas now. Oh, down in Bricktown has some really amazing art,
and I haven't done that before.
Well, even with this idea with the photography, that could be something for a later, either after school or summer class, where you would take your cameras and let's go to this museum, or, you know, being able to visit different places, you know, and then photographs can then go on maps, and you can have ways that people interact that way, you know, through the map and stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about your trip with Tricia. So, and I'll just start by saying maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago when I got to go to Chicago for their state tech conference called the ICE Conference. I like to do this when I go to conferences. I'll ask organizers and other folks, say, you know, who's just amazing? Who do I definitely need to see? And without a doubt, people said, you've got to see Tricia Fugelstadt. And sure enough, she is an amazing art teacher and also just media technology maker. Integration and media maker, and also a very generous sharer. And so when Megan and I started working together with STEAM and, you know, ideas for projects, she was one of the first people, and you got on Twitter, you know.
Tricia,
it's kind of scary at some points because you're like, that's so amazing. You know, you see it sort of like seeing a PBS documentary going, whoa, you know, that's, I mean, you were doing that level of stuff actually all the time in your art room, but when the technology and the green screen and all that kind of stuff, she's very masterful at doing that and shares so much. So what happened? You sent her an email, and what happened after that?
Yeah, and she just was so kind to open her classroom up to me and let me come and hang out for the day. And that, so, you know, sharer, you know, and wanting to share, and I took some notes and brought back a lot of ideas that I want to try to implement in my classroom, like just little sayings and callbacks and things like that, but simple routines and things that I want to try to use in my classroom, which I hope to do. But I just thought that's so nice of her and kind of her to let the stranger in. And she remembered you and the time that you guys met, and she knew you were a really big deal.
Well, not really.
And then she had another visitor that day. She had another visitor that day who was from New Zealand, and her name was Paula. And it was, when she came at the end of the day, I thought we had a really awesome discussion of so many different ideas and things she's doing in New Zealand and things that Trisha's doing. And I'm just thinking, you know, absorbing all this and thinking, how can I implement this, or how can we bring this to Cassidy? How can we try ideas like this?
Right.
So brought back a lot of ideas.
It can be overwhelming too. Shelly was talking about being off Twitter for a while.
One.
Getting back in and just, especially, I would think, being in that kind of an environment where there's so much going on and there's so many different levels to, it was like you were talking about the projects and how things were written down and what pieces they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a lot to break down probably as far as everything that she's
there are a lot on. Of layers, and so there's a lot of steps and very step by step, you know, to get projects like that complete without having chaos.
It's right.
Like magic.
Exactly.
Well, and at the same time, I mean, I think I'm projecting, but I'm guessing that you're in a hard position where you have projects and things you want to do, but then you're also responsible for trying to integrate and work with other grade levels and teachers and things to combine projects. So,
I think there's a desire to do that. And that's an open possibility, but I think it all varies on people, right? I mean, we do have autonomy here, but it just depends on the degree to which people want to, you know,
collaborate. And I really do love any opportunity, not every opportunity, but when there's a nice opportunity to pull in what kids are learning in their classrooms and integrate it in here. Yeah. I love doing that because I know we approach it from a different angle and we're looking at it differently.
Well, and maybe that's the conversation, and I guess I'm speaking as the grade level person, you know. It would be great to be able to sit down with a group of grade level people and say, these are the projects that I want to do as the art teacher. How can we make that, how can we integrate that into some of the projects and units that you guys are doing? You know?
That's a good idea.
So that.
And I haven't thought about it like that.
So instead of saying, classroom teacher saying, well, these are the, how can you support us? It's like, here are the projects that I want to do. I want to do this photography project and I want to look at these things.
That's
how does that integrate into what you're teaching? Is there any unit that might go to? Because I'm thinking, oh, maybe that would go great with our ancient Greek unit. Maybe we could analyze photographs and take photographs and work that project in.
Or do a field trip and look around and find buildings
that
have the columns.
Architecture.
Didn't
Brianna
Titus did that, I think, with her Latin students, and she was having them find examples of architecture in buildings in Oklahoma, and so they were identifying columns and whether they were Ionic or I don't have
Corinthian.
We didn't get into that, but that was definitely something that I was noticing. So that might just be another way to say, you want to do this project. How can we make our units fit into what project you want to do?
How can what we're doing, connect? Because sometimes when they have that siloed, it's probably going to just be more impactful all the time for kids when, oh yeah, I know you were talking about that in art, and here's where, you know, we see that over here.
I love that idea, and that makes me think of two things. One, the support that I get from teachers and the conversations that we can have and willingness to work together and collaborate is amazing, because I saw on my trip that that's not really a reality for a lot of teachers.
It's not.
But then the other thing, what did it just make me think of? I was going to tell you. I love that idea. So in the beginning of the year, I'm going to come to one of the meetings with my brand new baby, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Strapped on me. And,
of course.
That will be something.
You mean so that we can't hold it?
You really think you're not going to let get away with it?
Oh, it's a germ thing.
Well, little kids just want to grab baby's hands.
Oh, I'm talking about the adults.
But adults can't hold the baby. But I, part of what my mindset when I went to Chicago, I was thinking, how can I help bring more creativity to our teachers? Mm-hmm. What can I do as the art teacher?
Our goal setting.
A beautiful question. How can I be a resource to teachers without dedicating myself? But just letting teachers know that that I'm here and that I can help with projects. But I really like what you said about approaching it that way. So I kind of went to visit with, I visited with about four teachers while I was there.
Okay.
And I was looking for ideas on that. Mm-hmm. But I think what you just said is, I think that's a different way that I haven't thought about it. And I think that's what I need to try to do.
Well, that way you can decide what project or passion or whatever you want to pursue, and then we can help make it fit together. Because sometimes when classroom teachers have to think about it, they just go, well, we've always done, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Well, the best ways learning happens is when people are passionate and they're getting to further develop their passion and their interest. So I think that's a great thing to think about it from the art standpoint or from a classroom teacher standpoint.
Or a partnership standpoint. I like thinking about it as a partnership rather than you're doing your thing, I'm doing my thing, you know, but we're working together to partner with that.
So What kind of things was Trisha doing? Was she doing green screen when you were there?
Yeah, they weren't. I think most of the kids had done their green screen part of their project. And when I was there that day, they were taking that photo and going through the steps of saving it and opening it and then opening it in the app.
And they were doing their iPads.
On their iPad, yeah, following along, you know, one step at a time. And it seemed to work pretty smoothly.
I wonder if her kids all had their own iPad. I mean, they used the same one I know she's done different fundraising in order to get those resources, you know, for her school.
She's worked really hard for everything, her projector, everything.
Yep.
She's worked really hard for it. And as technology has evolved, you know, she, I think, just embraces the iPad and the apps and how accessible they are, because before she was working on a computer and still doing it. Right. But newer technology just makes it so much easier.
And more in kids' hands, which is something else with the upper division iPads, you know, moving over here, you know, that's going to mean potentially some opportunity if you would want for kids to have more hands-on with that or not just have to share yours.
Yeah.
So.
It would be good. I hope to build that up with time. I was hoping. So I have fewer tables now, so maybe I can. I took a table out. I'm working on my space. And the routine when kids come in and the flow of coming in. And that was something I did see in Trisha's room. When kids came in, they came right in and sat on the rug. And like Adeline said, on our last week of school, I said, I want to try something. Instead of going to your tables, just come in and have a seat so we can talk right here. And Adeline said, like Monday meeting or morning meeting, like morning meeting. So I'm thinking of what kind of art meeting, what it could be called when they come
in.
It's
a classroom meeting. I mean, we call it morning meeting because one of them takes place, but the other one doesn't. So it's just our class meeting.
But I love that because I realized I think that I waste a lot of time. I have 1 hour and I wish I had more time with them. But I think I waste a lot of time with just simple routine. It's always been that way of coming in, taking their seat, listening.
Trying to get their attention.
letting them say the very important things they need to say, like they lost a tooth or whatever's happening in their life. And being respectful of what they want to share, because it's really important to them. But then I really need to say these things. And and then getting started. And then coming to the rug for a story or to look at an artist. And then going back to the tables. And then calling one table at a time for supplies. There's just a lot of steps that I think that maybe it's not really necessary.
Right.
Just come, let's get right to it.
Yeah.
And then break, get what you need, and get started.
Well, and I've been catching up on my neuro teach before I start my other summer reading. I have to go back and finish what I was supposed to read in the spring. But that's what it talked about, is that in a classroom period, the most sacred time, the most important time is that first 10 minutes. You know, that's when kids' minds are ready to go, they're eager to learn, and a lot of times we waste those first 10, 15 minutes of every class period. And that's when the brain is most malleable to accept new information. And so, and then a lot of times teachers tend to save the best information for the last, which is the worst time for the student's brain. Right. Building up to that. So that's what it was talking about when I was reading this morning, is how to maximize and be very intentional setting up that early part of your class, because that's when we know through research that their brains are most malleable, and that's when they're going to be able to absorb the most information.
I'm on it. That's what I'm working on.
Me too.
I'm working on it. I just need a bigger rug so everyone can fit.
That's right. Well,
they're growing. They're getting bigger.
That's right.
So, but I really like that, how they would come in and they would get started on the rug, sharing whatever, and then they'd clean up in enough time, because usually, in my experience, it's like, quick, the teacher's coming right now.
Right.
Clean up quick, and then our jobs are lost sometimes, and it's done, you know, sloppily, and then we have to just line up, and then they're gone. So one thing I really liked, what Trisha did, is they would clean up with plenty of time, and then meet back on the rug to share information about the artist, or
and
to share
reflect,
a video,
you know,
or some resource that she found inspiring on Twitter or something.
Yeah, and that was the other piece in this NeuroTeach book, is that we also don't intentionally plan in reflection time. That being able to allow time to reflect on what we've done today, what we've learned today, what questions we still have, that's also just kind of a way to tie that off. And that's my challenge right there, is to build in enough time to my class period that we leave time for reflection. And they talked about the exit ticket or the whatever, you know, or the curiosity links. West used to do things like curiosity links, which I never get to because I feel always pressed for time. Mm-hmm. But I've got to really intentionally build that reflection piece at the end.
I think that's important, and that's part of it. And I have learned that that doesn't happen in our lineup when it's time to line up. And I hope that that can happen. It doesn't. It doesn't happen.
But even if it happens two times out of a week, then it's valuable.
That's true.
You know? I mean, it's not going to happen every day, you know? But some days, I mean, if we can do it as much as we can in a week.
That's true. So I thought place more emphasis on cleaning up early, not rushing, not stressing, meeting back on the rug. And then maybe sharing some of what kids have made right there. You know, right there. Everything's right there.
Well, and as you have kids document and you have more, you know, iPads and devices available for them to document, then there might be more opportunities for them to do that, you know, and to share. And that's something I think we want to see with Seesaw, hopefully, in the next year, is the reflecting and the seeing each other's work. And we need to come up with a good name for this. It's sort of like Seesaw to the Next Level, but there's lots of photo sharing. Really having students being able to share and then students being able to comment and just that I think that interactive piece. There's good digital citizenship in that. And then it's just a different dynamic too when it's not so teacher directed, you know, it's more student directed where they're choosing what do they want to share, what do they want to document, and could get to that photography part too, you know, seeing it through their eyes. What did they, you know, what was their perspective that they had? I don't know, it's a shift rather than I'm pretty much either doing this as a teacher to put it in or I'm telling you here, take a picture of this. Mm-hmm. Whereas the students are more empowered to say, we want to use this as a tool to help, you know, document our process of learning and what we are finding significant or our questions, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I still want to get Google Homes, you know, in our rooms and get kids into asking the questions. Like, how do you stump Google and where do you, you know, what are the good questions that we can ask? And even that, like, cause that gets, talk about creativity and humanity. There's more and more technology can do, but there's so many things it can't do. And there's so many ways creativity is beyond coding. I don't know. I think those are very human things when we're, when doing something creative, when we're, having conversations or doing things that aren't, you know, that's probably, and creating art, you know, I mean, there are computers that are creating art now, you know, I mean, they're playing games, people are able to program stuff. But I don't know. I think that getting that voice for students and empowering them, that all ties in with creativity. And I think that I would love for our technology tools to be used in more ways where we amplify what's happening and what students are doing, but we really empower students. Because I think we can probably use Seesaw. I think everybody could be using Seesaw, but we might not be empowering students. And that's a part I'd really love to see us. And because it's not just about technology, it's like your lesson. Are you empowering students to have choices and be able to make decisions and that whole agency piece? You know, how often do they really get to decide, you know, what I do next and how much am I told here? This is your next thing.
I know. And a lot of kids come to me and it drives me crazy, but it's, okay, I've done this, now what? Mm-hmm. I've done this, now what? Like, right. No. Right. Think about what we're doing and you don't need someone to tell you what's next or what you need to do next. That. Welcome to my world. We have trained very dependent learners that they're dependent on us. And I think that is my goal last year, but I'm going to start it more. I'm going to start it earlier this year, you know, training independent learners. As you were talking about documenting, I was thinking I've also been diving into this growth mindset kind of thing and documenting the process. So not always just documenting the final product, like the portrait.
That's true.
But I would have liked to see how it started. Mm-hmm. This is how I started. You know, and then this is what I thought I wanted to do. And then this is what I actually did. And this is what I didn't like this, but then I changed it into this. And then I loved it, you know. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see some of our projects. And I don't think you can do it with everything. But, you know, maybe intentionally planning
on that document, we're going to document the process, not just the product, but the process.
And I think it's giving time for kids to do that, because I'll go around with the iPad and I get those images. Mm-hmm. But then when I have my next class right away, and then the mm-hmm. next thing, and the next thing, and then
you're, yeah.
So it doesn't always get out there, but I think working in enough mm-hmm. time for students to take ownership sure. of it and to do it and to realize that the process is a really important part. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I think taking time for that would mm-hmm. tell them this is really important. And that's something else that Paula from New Zealand, I made some notes about what they're doing, because I thought their school in New Zealand used to be a play-based learning school.
Kind of like a Montessori, but
very play-based. But she oh. said it was without purpose and it was failing mm-hmm. and kids weren't learning. Yeah. And so they had to change a lot. And so she's the makerspace teacher there. And so I was asking her questions like, well, how does your makerspace work? You know, are teachers coming in and working with you? And it was so cool because she said that co-teaching is a part of every day.
Really?
Every day co-teaching.
Oh, wow.
And that the idea that she wanted to make it teacher... She wanted her makerspace to be teacher capacity, so the teachers could come in and mm-hmm. work in there. And then she would help get students started with whatever their ideas were, but then they take it back to the classroom and keep mm-hmm. working on it. But she said that they had learning journals, and that was Seesaw.
Mm-hmm.
But that their learning journals, they did document the whole process, mm-hmm. and that they had those moments captured, whether it was audio or mm-hmm. video or photo, mm-hmm. and then they would have that for when they were talking with parents. And I thought that's...
Well, maybe that's the shift with Seesaw, because we're I'm hunting for what do we call this little workshop that we could do? And we'll do that with all of our lower division teachers next year when we come back in August. Maybe that is the shift about the student being the creator, the student being the poster, this looking at Seesaw
well,
as the poster.
I think it's a
student.
Balance. I think you have to look at it as a balance,
oh,
because
yeah.
there's two sides to that. And I think... Just like you did with your Google workshops, I think doing, helping students find their voice or some, hey, hello. I don't know. I had a great terminology, but.
Well, vocabulary is important.
The vocabulary is important, but capturing student voice using Seesaw or mm-hmm. showcasing student learning and, mm-hmm. and there is a student piece to that. But there's also a teacher piece to that, because mm. there's both within that digital portfolio. Some of it is very student-driven and giving the student the voice to be able to document their own learning process. But it's also for the teacher to begin to document, like I'm thinking about when I do fluency passages or when I want to showcase and communicate what we're doing in the classroom that the parents may not be able to see, mm. you know. And so I think it's a balance between the two ways, helping students showcase their learning or help, I don't know.
I want to go back to that beginner mindset deal, because we had a great article. I'll link it in the show notes for this. But it was an article. It was in the context of music in an orchestra, mm-hmm. but it was a teacher who was asked to play this instrument, and it was really challenged and outside of comfort zone. And I've experienced that with art, but also with technology. I think we should strategically encourage our teachers to have experiences where they get to step outside their box. So you're painting with watercolors and you're not used to doing that.
Or
you're
like
sculpting.
What you did on clay stuff.
Yes.
And we're going, and here are all these adults, going, I don't know what to do with this piece of clay.
Well, tell about that, because wasn't that a thing you guys did for lower division?
But then there's so many teachers that don't even walk in the door. Mm-hmm. Because.
But that's okay.
That's part of that vulnerability.
Everybody's on a different journey.
But as our new director comes, and as we're just with Josh as a school encouraging people, I mean, it's like the online environment with the Google Plus. It's like swimming. We're inviting everybody to come to the swim party. Y'all don't have to swim. Y'all can watch, but we'd really like for you to, and we'll help, that process to be safe. So, was that just your initiative that you thought of as far
for
as the clay?
I thought it'd be nice to just have time to be together, mm-hmm. that we don't have to be together, but just time to talk and not have an agenda mm-hmm. and a time frame and have to go and wine and art, and people pay for that. Mm-hmm. Not here, I have all of that right here,
that's right.
And all the people, just let's come and be together.
Yeah.
And so a lot of teachers would come for each time, and I think I've done it like maybe 3 times a year, 1 year,
really?
Twice a year.
Oh, great. So it wasn't just a one-time thing. It's happening.
Yeah, but this year we just did it the one time, I think. Maybe twice. Well, I think that's
a strategic part of, because just not only, building the bridges, making the connections, helping us, connect with each other. And I really love it, especially when it's across division, like even the little Google workshop, not that we were creating and doing wonderful stuff, but we had people in the room together who don't normally sit in a room together and don't normally learn together.
And ideas, things you just talk about, things that come up without, needing to come up, the things that just kind of come up on their own tend to grow, a lot of times can grow into something.
Right.
That can be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So any other thoughts as far as from New Zealand, from, was Paula?
Paula.
From Paula, or from Tricia as far as just, because it sounds like a lot of what you took away were, classroom procedures.
You know Paula's last name?
We'll look her up on Twitter a little bit later.
I found her on Twitter. She's on, I don't know it right now.
We'll look at your followers and find the Paula.
I did bring a lot of things that I want to try, but,
What's your Twitter handle?
Oh, what is my Twitter handle?
Seeing New Shapes.
Yes, thank you. That's it. I don't know if there's anything else I'd want to say that would be really important
or inspiring.
Do you create art to reflect and to learn? Like, is that part of your process?
Like, for me personally or for me in the classroom?
Well, yeah. Like, as you went to Chicago and you, because you visited, you said, four different classrooms, so different schools and things. I'm just interested. How is creativity a part of your own reflection and learning process?
Well, I think I don't know. Oh, maybe when we were talking about photography, but or with the Yo-Yo Ma and the musicians, but just taking little bits and kind of putting them together in new ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, I don't know, my head is all these puzzle pieces and it's very crazy in there. But I think that's part of it.
Do you do that with drawing? Do you do that with drawing, or how do you make that montage to take those puzzle pieces and then take them out of your?
I will say having the Apple Pencil on the iPad has helped my life become more organized and getting it all in one place. Because usually there's a notebook here, a notebook there, the one in my bag, like the one I take with me everywhere.
Right.
And having this iPad, I've been able to have all these different notebooks in one place in the GoodNotes app.
What is the app? So this is GoodNotes.
Yeah, GoodNotes. I can have so many different notebooks, and it's all in one place.
Well, we need to do a session next year at school about that, just about note-taking. Nathan is really into OneNote by Microsoft. I think Jim is as well.
Maybe Jim,
Rob
too.
Rob Huber is doing something different. I don't remember if it's Notability, but anyway, the different things is that that's a universal deal. How are we taking notes? How are we processing our new ideas? And, how is this digital tool fitting into our workflow?
Yeah, and a couple of people have asked me recently about GoodNotes, and I've, shared a little bit, but I think it's...
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. Every new iPad now, you don't have to have a Pro, supports the Apple Pencil. Mm-hmm. And so... as we look at iPads and, some of the older ones, and whatever, and we get new ones, we may, we're gonna get one for Phi Theater, well, it's gonna be there to control the, sound system, but it doesn't necessarily have to be, one that you draw on with a stylus, et cetera. So I think we need to look at that and look at how we make those available. Jared Hofer in Upper Division has been real interested in the stylus and that sketchnoting when we did that session. And so anyway, I'd like to grow that more and then find ways for us to be able to practice and maybe, just like with the clay and stuff, maybe there's something that we can do like that as a get together for faculty.
But getting out of your comfort zone, getting in a place that you're not usually working in or with materials you don't usually work with, because the article that you were referencing, what I thought was so beautiful about that is it all comes back to just remembering that our students are, like, this is all fresh to them. They're
every day
they're novice at this, and they maybe have never done this before, and we forget that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And things like art, or like my son who's in kindergarten now, there's so much new. And we forget that because we've done it so often, or we forget what that feels like.
Well, we forget how hard it is, how hard it is. And
And that's really an important part of it, is you're dipping your toes in it, and then jumping in it. And that's the experience.
All right. Very good. So people can find you, Megan, at Seeing New Shapes on Twitter.
Yeah.
Shelley's S. Fryer.
I know. I'm looking for this Paula, but I cannot find her.
We'll find her. And we'll include that in the show notes. So if you're listening to this and want to reach out to us and have questions or feedback, we would love to hear from you.
Did you give your Twitter?
I'm W. Fryer.
There you go.
That's right. So, and you're probably finding this on speedofcreativity.org. But if you find it somewhere else, let us know that too. So hopefully these ideas will be shared.
And hopefully you will be inspired to do something new or to take an idea you've been thinking on.
Absolutely.
And collaborate. Go for it.
And collaborate and work with others. And
or take it apart.
Something different.
And then go for it.
There you go.
Hello, it is Saturday, the 14th of July, 2018, and this is Wes Fryer with Shelley, and we have led two different Make Media camps this summer, and I just thought it would be good to reflect a little bit on some of the lessons learned. We did one here in Oklahoma City yesterday, and then the week before?
Kansas City.
Yeah, we were in Kansas City. So these workshops are a modification of the iPad Media Camp that I've led, and Shelley and I have led together the past five summers, which has been a three-day workshop, and really the best. It's morphed into the when I say the best, I think the most rewarding and impactful professional development that I've had a chance to certainly craft myself and directly lead. I would put the Mobile Learning Conference and some of the Arizona K-12 cohort model PD that Tony Vincent is involved in. And there's definitely other PD that's been impactful. But in terms of things that I've helped put together, this model was really morphed. And so the thinking, I'm not going to be putting all my words together very well today. The thinking is that, you know, it is a multi-device world, even in our school where we have a bunch of iPads. We've also got a bunch of Chromebooks. And so we want to encourage, much in the same way that the Show with Media digital literacy framework or multimedia project framework that I've, you know, been working on for years says whatever device you have, these are products you can create. The Make Media Workshop says that too. Use the device that you have to create different products. And then the other thing is it's just so much easier for people to carve out a single day rather than 3 days. And so it seems like it's a much more doable thing, but of course, you got to pare it down.
It's a little more condensed.
Yeah, right. It's more condensed. So what are your thoughts overall? I mean, last year's Jackson Hole, Wyoming iPad Media Camp was definitely a professional development highlight for a lot of reasons. What are your thoughts overall about the Make Media Camp model and just your overall thoughts before we dive into these lessons learned?
Well, I would add in there that a lot of teachers have MacBooks too. So, I mean, it add on to the list of devices that teachers mm-hmm. are using to create media.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we need to, there's that out there too. I really like the 1 day model, but because it is so condensed, I do feel like that, we need to make sure that they have enough creation time. And so that's what I liked about the 3 day is that I never felt rushed, mm-hmm. that we had plenty of time to talk over ideas, because that's one thing I noticed from both of our workshops, that a lot of this is just processing mm-hmm. thoughts and ideas with each other, with the instructors, and teachers want to do that. Students need to do that. They need to process and not just jump into a project. So that's one thing the 3 day allows us to do, is to have more time for processing thoughts and ideas and creativity.
Because we're doing six basically projects and activities. If you consider the goose hunt an activity, we're doing six different things in 1 day versus doing, you know, maybe eight things over 3 days.
Exactly.
So.
And I think it's really important, you know, you never know the skill set that, and when you teach a multi-device workshop,
right.
and each device has its own, you know, it may be easier to do this on an iPad, but it's easier to share it on a Chromebook. It may be, you know, in this app, it has the plus button, in this app, you know, on the Chromebook, it does this. So, I mean, you're not only just teaching, you know,
the making of the media, you're also teaching a lot of digital skills that go in. And so depending on the ability level of your students, I think can also be a big variable in a one day.
Okay. So actually, I don't want to make this too long because I think I want to put this together with the Megan Thompson interview that we did. And we've got our dinner that's going to be done here in a little bit. So this isn't going to be.
And you're
going to
edit this part out, right?
No, I'm not.
It's brief.
Well, I could, I guess, but probably not. All right. So let's go through our lessons learned. Number one, use media to shorten the intro. That was just something that may seem obvious, but in Kansas City, I think our intro ended up being a lot longer than it needed to be. And so we used Adobe Voice, Adobe Voice Video, which we don't actually teach as an app, but it's a fantastic way to make a narrated slideshow. And I think we made a 3-minute video, and that really streamlined the process of starting the day.
It did, but I think I want to go back in and share more about my own self instead of letting you decide what you're going to share about me.
That's right. I wrote the script, so yeah. You were like, what's this? Okay, yeah. But we also just got that done.
That's right.
But we could redo that.
I like doing that.
I think it was good.
Yeah.
Progression of projects. You want to talk a little bit about that order and how we did a little bit of modification?
I think it was really important to scaffold the projects. And I think one of the first things that we know, and Wes likes to use
I don't know, our voices.
You know something.
What is it that you do, that you like to do?
No, I think it's really important that we, Wes talks about using a recipe and gathering the ingredients and baking a cake and, you know, he's a real foodie.
Metaphor.
But metaphor. That's the word I was looking
for.
Metaphor.
Are good.
So, but I do think that that is really important in scaffolding, not only just digital skills on how to do something, but where to go to get that, because we were also at the same time talking about digital literacy and we were also talking about safety and we were all talking, you know, so, but we do scaffold it like, how do you get an image? Where do you go to get an image?
Image searching. So the progression we did, we moved narrated image to the front instead of photo collage. So narrated image, photo collage, podcast, paper slide video.
So many of the projects that we choose are very dependent on the image.
And that's where we talk
and
about.
And so that's where we start.
Yeah, that's where we talk
we
about
start
images
with that.
As the raw materials, the ingredients of media projects.
Yes.
And this time we were very explicit about teaching image search, talking about how you don't want to do image search with just open Google search. You don't want to have the kids in a, you know, accidentally or just
looking for images where attribution is already added in. That's
exactly.
Very important.
Exactly. Photos for class, Unsplash, and then what? Pics for kids. What's that app? The photo collage app.
Oh, Pick Kids.
Pick Kids. Thank you. Anyway, that I really like that because it is. That's a core competency. And as we talked about at the end of the day, teachers could start with ebook if they wanted, but it really is nice to do building blocks. And I mean, as we hoped, and it does. Teachers can gain quick confidence having a picture and adding their voice.
But
using
you know
C-Saw
what? Again,
Google.
It goes back. Now that we've changed this to multi-device, it is different adding an image to an iPad and adding an image in a Chromebook.
Well,
so, you know.
Let's segue to this because I just wrote this down reminding me. Seesaw activities. Can you talk a little bit about what we did there and what we learned with Seesaw?
We have found that Seesaw for us in these workshops is premium.
Transformative.
It is transformative because it gives us a place to put our media that the students are creating. And we're creating a lot of media in that, in one space where they can see each other's work, but we can also do that reflection piece and do that assessment piece within that. And they get to experience Seesaw as a student.
And talk about digital citizenship.
And
interaction
so
with comments.
We love that. But the thing that I started playing around with, it's relatively new to Seesaw, are the activities. And so there's a whole activity library out there that Seesaw is putting together and allowing teachers to contribute to. And it is fabulous. And when I first did my activities, they were way too wordy and way too complicated.
Well,
I was writing them for adults
well,
in
and
a
we
workshop.
We were also trying to do them multi-platform, which we decided was a mistake. Because as a teacher, if you're going to do that for your kids, you're going to know, okay, my kids are doing it on a Chromebook, they're doing it on an iPad.
Right. Well, and then originally I was writing it for adults who were going to be participants in a workshop. But I really backed off and saw that even adults need simple language. Mm-hmm. Even adults need pictorials, supports. They don't need the... in oral instructions as much, but
I found that, like you said, it's like our recipe card.
It
gives the basic steps for the project that we're working on. And I do think that that is a very valuable tool, is that activities library that Seesaw is putting together. And that was just a really awesome layer to this. And I thought it was really great for, again, for adult participants in our workshop to be able to experience this as a student and to see, because I think that'll help them as teachers too.
Right. That, and I think that's one thing I just wrote down too, that we'll, in the future, next time we're going to use activity recipe cards. We're going to play with that. Some of our friends in Montana have done a great job with that in some of their workshops that I've attended. And, you know, shout out to them. I'll put a shout out in the show notes. Anyway, I think that's something we'll do. Agenda links. It definitely worked better to have the, you know, direct links, to the examples in the agenda, and then to archive these to a Google site.
Yes.
Something just on a logistical, technical, you know, setup. I have used a Google site for every iPad Media Camp I've done or we've done. Those are all available, by the way, on wiki.ipadmediacamp.com. But, you know, I have the main website, ipadmediacamp.com, but then you click over to the wiki to show, to see the agenda. And I've wrestled with that. One thing too, Google Sites has not yet allowed for domain mapping. This is a, you know, technical squirrel, but you have to go with sites.google.com/home/blah blah blah for your address. I can't, as an individual yet, you have to be a G Suite organization to map a Google site so that it could be something like wiki.makemediacamp.com. So, you can forward the link, but anyway, I've decided to just always have the current agenda on the website, makemediacamp.com/agenda, and then add at the bottom additional resources, because we always have things that come up that we didn't plan for, and someone asks a question, and, oh, how do you make that QR code? Oh, this is the site we use. By the way, we need to write your post about recommended kid podcasts.
Yes.
That was a question that came
up. That would be great.
So anyway, after the workshop, move it over to the Google site and then, you know, put the updated version, because this is something that always morphs. So anyway, that worked well. Would you like to talk a little bit about Wi-Fi speed and filtering?
Well, I mean, that we just know that that is absolutely necessary, especially if you're going to do a workshop in making media.
Right.
Is that the Wi-Fi... 5 speed is critical.
Yeah.
You just can't wait around for things to load,
right,
or kick you off of a network.
Right. Shout out though to Eric.
Oh,
Coleman,
Eric was
to,
wonderful.
Rhonda, at Arthur Elementary yesterday, because, you know, the open network, we didn't have any filtering issues at all as far as the site we couldn't get to. But in terms of the speed, that it does test it when people, and everyone's bringing, you know, usually more than one device.
Multiple devices. We were working off our phones. Our phones were connected.
Yeah.
Our iPads were connected, and our Chromebooks,
right,
and our MacBooks in some cases. So and then if we had 8 people, so if we had had double that.
I mean, 10 people with about, you know, 3 devices each. So you got 30 devices on that network, and, you know, access points are supposed to. But I think actually that might be something I'm going to put on the request, is to have a high density access point. Cause for our, at our school using Cisco Meraki, you know, that means you can handle 300 connections versus just 50. So, and then everyone on the same access point too. It's, this workshop tests the Wi-Fi. It pushes the Wi-Fi.
Absolutely.
And so that's,
but you know what? A classroom does too.
Well, right.
Because when I am teaching a lesson in the classroom using media,
absolutely,
and creating media, and every kid is on a device, that taps your website.
Well,
and there is nothing more frustrating or getting hot under the collar is when you're having to wait around.
Yeah.
On that.
So, I mean, there's teachable moments in all that, working around.
Yes.
Oh, it was good, by the way. There's another lesson learned to have video adapters. Like, we were having a little bit of issue with Apple TV. It's always good when you're presenting with devices to be able to plug in directly to the HDMI. And so, anyway, that's another lesson learned. Let's see. How about ebooks? You want to talk a little bit about what we learned with templates and Chrome and simplification?
You know, I love Book Creator, and we love doing it on the Chromebook. That is just huge. We also,
Did a template this time.
Like we did at Jackson Hole.
Like we did at Jackson Hole. I wish we had planned it a little earlier. We kind of did it on the fly. I knew that's what we wanted to do, and we did it. And it worked.
And to be clear, we were in Chrome. We were on the app, bookcreator.com site. Yes. And so our participants were able to copy an EPUB book template that I had created, and then they duplicated it for themselves.
Yes, I wish we had tried to add the audio. Some of the things that we did in Seesaw where we had separate audio.
Yeah, I think what we learned was you don't want to go too deep with hyperlinking and downloading content.
Well, in a beginner book creator introduction kind of thing. Right. Later, I mean, it's possible. It all worked. It's possible, and we had several workarounds, but when you start doing workarounds with teachers that are just learning in the beginning,
that can get confusing. It's like we end up going to hyperlink
immediately
with somebody's first book creator. So, next time we're going to stick with just pictures and text that you put in and then put
but
in
But I
picture.
Do see the value of starting with a shared book and not just jump into creating their own. But then again, that's where I do like the 3 day because we had a whole day for book creator and we could do a little bit of that at a time.
But I think we want to start it faster. I think so. You know,
too.
It was great to do Goose Chase and talk about it, but I think our start time, we really only left 45 minutes.
But we didn't end up using that media both times. We've done that Goose Chase to collect media and then we haven't used it. Yeah. And that's the whole purpose in doing it.
Well, it was also.
And so, I mean,
it has multiple purposes.
It does have multiple, and it is. But,
well, if I hadn't got the template to work, then we would have ended up having them do a goose chase.
So
that was
in
our plan.
Some ways, and I want to make the goose chase fun and not just too schooly, you know? So I think, I don't know, I love creating the books. That's the icing on the cake of the day.
Should we pause this and for the Stromboli, or do you want to go take it out and I'll keep talking?
You keep talking, I'll go take it out.
Okay. All right. So next item, was more work time. We were already talking a little bit about that. Simplifying our instruction. Streamlining the way that we do the pedagogy. You know, we realize, and this is what's so wonderful about getting to collaborate on this workshop and not doing this, you know, alone, is that there's a ton of pedagogy that we end up talking about here in terms of here's how you might do this with your kids, here's some limits that you might want to put on, for instance, the time that you're going to give them to work on, to search for images. Or you may not want to have them search for images. You may want to pre-select a library and provide that for your kids. So that, you know, we're going to do a lesson about, endangered animals, and here's a library of 30, you know, images in Google Drive that you can draw from, but being able to streamline the process. All that pedagogy is really important, but sometimes we get too wordy talking about it. The other thing is we want to offer this as an online class, maybe even this fall. And so thinking about how we can weave the pedagogy pieces in, but not, you know, become bogged down, with them. And also no squirrels. Shelley's always good about, you know, encouraging me not to go down too many rabbit holes and chase squirrels with different things and questions and things like that that came up. So, did you feel like the second workshop yesterday was better with respect to work time and simplified instruction?
Yes. Yes. I always want more work time, but I do think it was so much better. And I got involved being a participant, and I think really I need to be more of a support person. So I enjoy the work time, and I'm challenged by the work time. And as much as I know how to do it, each time I do a project – I put more thought into it and get better. So
it's also good for us to play
and
for us to create.
And that's part of why we like to do this.
Even next
summer,
we may talk to Tony. I think it could be so fun to go out to Arizona if we could like facilitate one of the strands, because it is 4 or 5 days, you know, or for us to think about make media camp the week version, you know, and going to somewhere that's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I mean, cause we could do that and then people would have just so much more time.
Well, it's wonderful to bounce ideas off of each other. And I think that's what I would like to do is get a cadre of people together that are really into this designing and creating and sharing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I
do you know the biggest part missing?
Oh.
The biggest part missing was, okay, it's a phone call from a child. We were going to pause.
Hi, sweetie.
All right. We're back after talking to our daughter. Let's see. A couple more things. Evaluation. You said I hadn't created this in advance. One of the things, and we all put this link in the show notes, but for ed camps and other professional development, I've loved being able to use Google to have a Google form. But then once you fill out the form, you can get a professional development certificate with credit. And so I'm going to do that again. And the questions we were thinking of is, what was most valuable of the day? What would you like to have more of? How could we improve instruction? How likely are you to take an activity that we did back to your classroom? Which of our projects are you most likely to use with students? And then other comments. So that'll be the evaluation. You want to talk a little bit about small groups for Goose Chase? And just tell the people, they may not have any idea what Goose Chase is. You want to tell them what it is, and then kind of what have we learned after doing this multiple times? Because last summer we did it with the group in Jackson Hole. We did it with Marietta Teachers. You all did it.
Yeah, it's great. You can get a free subscription, but you get two teams. But we paid a little bit, maybe around
40 yeah, bucks,
$50-ish.
A year.
Yeah. So anyway, and it's a scavenger hunt. And so they have a whole library of things. You do it with your phone or your iPad. It worked with the iPad. And you, on the app, whoever creates the Goose Chase creates the scavenger hunt, and you have a library of things to choose from, or you can create your own specific. You can collect pictures or you can collect media. It's great to be in groups. Some of ours we need to go back because we had groups of two, but you can have as many as 6 to 8 to 10 people in a group.
With this paid version or tier, you can have 10 groups that you make in advance. Shout out to Peggy George, who shared this during Classroom 2.0 Live, I think last summer. And it really is great. It's something that does it's fun. It's great to do after lunch after you've eaten and get everybody up and active.
And it's fun and people laugh and you can collect media. The idea is you can collect media and then be able to use that media in a book, or we've used it in Book Creator and things. We need to see how that progresses.
We need to see if we can give more time after the Goose Chase for people perhaps to open up the template and start that, and then give them a choice. If you want to create your Goose Chase book, or maybe add pages to your book with your Goose Chase, you can. So.
Or just use it. Because when we were at Make, Create, and Learn and we did the Goose Chase, we were very specific in the types of media that we were collecting. You know, we collect a picture of a image collage. Collect a picture of a...
Well, we did video
narrative.
More there,
so
too.
So collect a sample of why you think, you know, making media is important for students. Or, you know,
or
so we can
use... what is a makerspace and why is it important?
So you can do fun, silly things, you know, but you can also include media that would be appropriate.
Time-wise...
As a reflection.
We have about 35 items in our what's called mission bank, and we gave, I think, about 20 or 25 minutes. I think 30 minutes works. I don't know. It could have been fun if we'd had more people to go up to three or four, but it worked good to have two in a group. You know, we've had larger groups as well. So anyway, that was some lessons learned. We definitely need to get the word out earlier about our workshops. In fact, there's a chance we may postpone the one for Dallas. I've used some Facebook advertising. Again, I did that years ago. If you haven't looked into that, it is pretty incredible how you can target folks. Cause like, we've targeted people living within a 50-mile radius of the workshop who were teachers, who were college graduates, who were between the ages of 21 and I think we did 60 for this one. And that's actually how the teachers or the curriculum director and principal from Atchison, Kansas had heard about it in Kansas City last week. But, you know, the title might be intimidating. One of Shelley's friends, who's a teacher here in Oklahoma City, said she'd seen it on Facebook, but it sounded
too hard.
It sounded intimidating, as making media, and she didn't think, you know, she thought it wouldn't be basic enough. Let's talk about paper slide video. I've just loved doing that, and that's the project we did right before lunch. You want to talk a little bit about how we did it, preparing in advance or brainstorming on the fly this last time, as far as the topics that we did, whether, you know, the first time kind of had the pedagogy of Media Camp on a Google Doc, but then we did Classroom Community yesterday, so how did you think one of those worked better than the other, or?
I thought it worked great. I think both of them were great. I think You know, the first one, we had already brainstormed some ideas just because we were interested in it. And the other teachers like that too, pedagogy. But I think it's important to have teachers come up with questions too. And it's hard. You know, I love to see teachers in the role of a student mm-hmm. because hopefully they realize how hard it is to come up with an idea and how people don't want to talk out loud.
You put yourself out there.
You put yourself out there and wow. you're thinking about it. And you know, the teacher's like going, well, is that something you think everybody would be interested in, or is that, you know, yeah. So I thought it was good. I think we also should always have ideas, like a good teacher does. You put the question out there, mm-hmm. but then if no ideas are being generated, then you have something to go with, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think having that seated just a little bit, so right. we have at least some ideas that might work. But I do love using this as a reflection tool mm-hmm. and getting, like, our question was, how do we help others build classroom community mm-hmm. or build community? And why is community important? And I think that's a big question.
The podcast, I mean, I think my favorite part of the whole workshop is seeing you, you know, being able to teach radio show and classroom podcast. In addition to learning, it's kind of big for the first time, that we could take an EPUB in Book Creator for Chrome, in the Chrome browser, and that people can duplicate it. We learned it's better to have them not see each other's, to turn off the read each other's books when that happens,
yes.
to make it less complicated. The other big learning was that Shelley's been doing her podcast for years, literally, at least what, yeah. 4 years, in Opinion, which no longer provides hosting for the podcast, and so we're in the process of switching her over to Anchor, and Anchor is the app and website they provide hosting that we're recommending for teachers to use. We took the recording out of Opinion where Shelley edited it, and then we flipped it into Anchor. Now maybe next time you might just do it in Anchor, but it's so powerful to see how you edit it and you're able to trim it. I don't know. I think it might be fine to do that as an app smash, and then you can just tell them. But if you don't want to do this, just record in Anchor, because Anchor doesn't allow for the segment editing in the same way.
Yeah,
that
and
Opinion
I love
does.
That. I love being able to have the students know that if they mess up, it's not a big deal. If I need to prompt students, I love that. I love so I love having some editing possibilities with that, because if you couldn't, some of them, they just wouldn't be very good.
Right.
I mean, there would be too many pauses.
Well, right. There's too many pauses. There's
yeah.
ahs, there's ums. I mean, it's that one of the best things about a podcast is it's not live.
Mm-hmm.
And so you
right.
can pause. You can mm-hmm. edit out. You can, you know,
mess up.
You can put your best foot forward. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just a live performance. So,
but I think all the teachers were really receptive to the,
you know,
to that idea.
Well, and
it brought up the question of other podcasts, kid podcasts, mm-hmm. you know, kid-specific podcasts, and the importance of listening to audio, you know,
yes.
just for listening's sake.
Yes. Well, and outside sharing,
yeah.
because you were able to talk about, well, this is something that we do for outside audience. It's not just for the kids in the class, but, you know, we've got students at K-State with Cindy Danner Kuhn who, you know, have commented on your blog and listened to the podcast and, you know, parents and others. And that's just a different way of thinking about a product.
It gives you a window into a classroom.
Well,
and
it's another way of thinking about a product. You're thinking
right.
about an authentic product for an outside audience, not just an inside audience. And so, anyway, I think that was really good. All right, last thing. Next, design, create, and share lesson modification workshops. We want to talk a little bit about our thinking there. That was something that certainly resonated in Kansas City with the teachers as far as that whole idea of the new replacement for the Madeline Hunter lesson plan cycle is to design your lesson, have students create some kind of a project or product, and then share it out. When I was in Egypt in November, that was something I had people, you know, come up to me because I had mentioned that in my keynote. Oh, where can I learn more about that? And I'm like, we haven't written that book yet. But I think we both have a sense that having teachers bring a lesson to a workshop and then being able to really work on, you know, enhancing it, what did we call that assessment?
Enriched assessment.
Enriched assessment, right. Yeah. Blending technologies for enriched assessment. That might, if we did a multi-day make media camp that might be something that you could do individually. People could work in groups and do things, but then you could have people
bring
that lesson.
Well, better yet, I have a team of teachers, like the language arts team the social studies team.
Tech coaching. Tech coaching each other. Working together
and helping that would be fabulous. But we've got it, and I hope we're getting past this point, but, it's not about the technology. The technology is just a means of creating a product. So we've got to get past the idea that I want to, I'm glad I hear teachers saying I want to do more with technology. I heard that several times yesterday. I want to do more with technology in my class. And so, but we're not teaching a technology lesson. We're teaching a good language arts lesson that has some technology elements.
And the way that I would say that is technology is not the focus.
Right.
Right? Sometimes when people will say it's not about the technology, they almost become dismissive, and then it's like, well, wait a minute. If you want to make green screen videos, please don't just hand me a Chromebook. I'm going to need some kind. I mean, there are some that now have world-facing cameras and blah, blah, blah. But probably I'm going to use some kind of a smartphone or tablet to be able to capture media. You know, tools do make a difference. And I need technology. Like, how much technology do I need? Do I need one for every student? Can we work in groups? But I think what we're saying is the technology is not the focus. The focus is the learning. And the focus is, language arts and skills and ideas and... Right. We're not here to just say, hey, everybody, we're just learning, paper slide video. We're here to talk about enriched assessment or talk
building
about
community building classroom or community pedagogy why.
And that's actually probably why for the podcast topic as well as for the paper slide video, it's good that we don't make it technology focused.
Sure.
We pick a topic for those. Yeah. Those are whole class activities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that worked out nice to have a variety of individual as well as whole class. This was definitely, this had more elements of an awareness level workshop than I got to spend an hour or 2 hours, making my own.
Right.
Such and such. But I think that's somewhat just inherent to the timing of it, that if you have only a day and you want to introduce people to a variety of products, then you're not going to be able to, you're going to be, time is going to be limited, so.
Right.
Okay, last question for you. What are you most excited for your own classroom as you are your second year at Cassidy and you're sharing iPads and, having access to Chromebooks, which the last year was the first year for that, mm-hmm. and your project you guys did?
Well, I definitely want to do more with Google Classroom.
Why is that?
Because I think that'll streamline some things in the classroom as far as doing assignments, and I want to start that earlier so that when I'm really using it later in the school year, that they already know and are familiar with it.
Because the animal research project you did really, that was your first opportunity at the end of the year.
Yes, that was at the end of the year, and I'd like to do that earlier in the year. Give kids an opportunity to type papers and just to get that rolling a little earlier. Get their parents used to that idea. And it's something that they can do at home. It's something that they can open up and start a Google Doc at home. And I just want that to be a part of something that they have in their toolbox of learning. And then I definitely want to do more podcasts this year. I only did 12. And that's not near enough. And I really want to, get that rolling a little more. And then I've got some great, language arts units and I'm excited about how to, do some, media stations within the classroom to give students more opportunity to make and create.
Well, it was great to have so many of our teachers at the workshop mm-hmm. yesterday. It was wonderful to have the teachers from Arthur. I love being able to go to a different school. I love being mm-hmm. able to have teachers with different situations and perspectives, being able to share, getting to have lunch and going out. That's always actually a pretty important part. But I'm excited to follow up with our teachers in a tech coaching capacity to see where they want to take these projects and then to also think about how with our schedule and the constraints we have, can we provide some professional development support for teachers, whether that's as part of grade levels? Because we had teachers from different grade levels, right? Everyone was from different grade levels.
Well, we had one from first, second, third, fourth.
Yeah. So one from every
from each grade level.
Which is awesome. Which is awesome. You'll be the ambassadors taking Making Media Camp back to your grade level teams.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Shelley, where can people find you online if they'd like to hear
you
more?
You love to ask that question, don't you?
Well, it's the question we always end our, our Ed Camp,
so,
or our, whatever we do, Ed Tech Situation Room podcast.
Let's see. You can find me on Twitter at @sfryer. And you can find my blog at shelleyfryer.com. And then my school website, which is
MrsFryer.cassidy.org. Look at you, remembering your web addresses.
I had to struggle on that one.
I am W. Fryer on Twitter, speedofcreativity.org, which is probably where you're finding this podcast. And I am also with Jason Neifer sharing the EdTech Situation Room podcast on a weekly basis on Wednesday nights, which is EdTechSR on Twitter, EdTechSR.com, and Making Media Camp is available at MakeMediaCamp.com and on Twitter at MakeMediaCamp. So, until next time.
Thank you for listening.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcasts are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.